Hey everyone, welcome to A Year in Our Life, Part 1 and Part 2. I think I'm gonna slam them together or just use this intro for both. I haven't decided yet. Anyway, welcome to Zach and Laura's Life, or as I like to call it, Editing Articulate Warbling and following them on Facebook. Did you know that you can follow them on Facebook? Did you know that you can go to Articulate Warbling on Facebook? Did you know that you can subscribe to Articulate Warbling on Apple and anywhere else that you find podcasts? You don't have to subscribe to Radio Free Oleander, PGTTCM, Blacklock Audio Tales, or whoever you subscribe to on that one RSS feed, which may be this RSS feed. Subscribe to them. You're going to get stuff on there that you're not going to get on here, theoretically. And also, following them on Facebook, you're going to find out what's going on with them and cool things about what's going on in general. I'm DB Spitzer. I produce this show. I edit it, kind of. And most of the time, I just kind of listen to it and then go, no, I'll leave that in. And I just cut out some of the ums and buzz and long pauses and all that kind of fun stuff. And I have to say, I first had Zach on People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos a couple of years back. Blacklock Audio Tales, the audiobook podcast that I do, did. And yeah, no, and I kept saying Zach should have a podcast. Zach should have a podcast. Zach's fun to talk to. Zach's fun to listen to. And people really always liked listening to the Zach episode, so I was like, yeah, sure, no problem. And around the time that Zach got a podcast, Zach also got a girlfriend. Ooh. And then at one point in time, she became part of the podcast, and Zach's like, Laura's part of the podcast, and I'm like, okay, cool. I don't care, just make a podcast. If you make a podcast, I'm fine with it. And I didn't know if it'd be good. I didn't know if it'd be bad. I didn't know if they'd stay together. I didn't know what would be going on. But I just let it go, and it's way better than just listening to Zach. It's so funny listening to Laura make fun of Zach. I know that's kind of mean, but it's I like it when Laura calls Zach out on his shit. It's a lot of fun. But they both take and give quite a bit, and it's fun to listen to their perspective and their ideas and what they've got going on. And it's a lot of fun to hear about things that are going on. I'm some like 95-year-old geezer in Portland, and there's an airplane flying over me, but I'm still gonna keep recording, and I'm not gonna edit this out. And, I learn about things that I wouldn't hear about because, I'm still listening to CB radio and watching VHS of Mr. Belvedere and Night Court and Happy Days and a bunch of other stuff that Zach doesn't know about because he's, what, 26, 27, 25, 23? I don't know. And I have no idea how old Laura is. I think she's 23? I don't know. Anyway. I imagine Zach was all like, this is how they met. Imagine a pub in Brighton, clinks of glasses, people playing games and talking, and or it's really quiet and kind of sad. Let's say it's really quiet and kind of sad. Hey, love, I'm an experimental writer. My name's Zach Ferguson. Zach A. Ferguson. A stands for asshole. Yeah, love, I can buy you a pint. Yeah, I got my own podcast. Sorry, my British accent is terrible. I'm like more on the like the Dick Van Dyke scale of terrible British accents. Anyway, enough of me. Here's Zach and Laura. Thank you so much, Zach and Laura. This has been such a great show. It's been great to work with you. And I'm gonna make sure this goes up right away. And also listen to Herbie Halloween first impression commentary coming up sooner than later.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the latest episode, which is A Year in Our Life of Articulate Warbling, with me, Laura, and
Me, Zach. And it's close to the anniversary of Articulate Warbling as well.
It's not far off, is it? Because it really wasn't far off.
No, because
us first meeting. Well,
us first meeting, I started doing it, and then not far off from meeting, you started integrating into it.
Yeah, it must have only been like November time.
It was Star Wars review,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
So it was in the wake of Christmas, I believe, after Christmas.
Oh no, it was definitely before Christmas.
No, I don't think it was.
Yeah, but we started Sweat Drench Press in January.
Because we had our hoo-ha, didn't we?
Yeah, but I thought Articulate, well, we started Articulate Warbling together before Christmas. Anyway, look, it's nearly a year in Articulate Warbling times. It is a year in our lives that we have been together. Happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary.
So, Zach, what did you get for your anniversary present?
Well, I got Neverwhere by Neil Gaiman, illustrated by Chris Riddell, which is something that's been, like, you know, there I've wanted. And something very special is my William S. Burroughs canvas, which I've wanted for a very, very long time. But there's a lot of shit art out there that people wanted you to pay a lot of money for. But eventually Laura turned around and went, what is there that you would like as an anniversary present? And I went, a William S. Burroughs canvas. We were kind of like, well, who was the person? Who was it? Terry Pratchett? Terry Gilliam? There was someone else. Stanley Kubrick? Like,
Danny Boyle. Is the person that you told me, you said you wanted a canvas of William S. Burroughs in black and white and you wanted a canvas of Danny Boyle in
Yeah,
black
because
and white.
Not many people recognise Danny Boyle as a creator, so that might be the next canvas for the next year. Could be a canvas type thing.
Plus also we've got Christmas coming.
Yes.
We've also got your birthday in January.
And I just really want Danny Boyle on my wall. That was fucking awful. I'm so sorry, Danny.
Not as bad as your Welsh accent or your Australian accent or any other accent bar Scottish.
I'm really good at Scottish, but that's just because I love Trainspotting, and I've got my Trainspotting poster, which is, you know,
somehow kicks you into
it. Choose life, choose a job, choose a career, choose a family, choose a fucking big television, choose washing machines, cars, compact displays, and electrical tin openers. It does. I don't know. I think it's just that way it's written. Anyway, I've got a Burroughs canvas, and Laura, kindly enough, got the bigger version, and it's just, it's meaningful for me, because she knows what William S. Burroughs means to me, she knows that I've got quite a thing for...
I got a discount.
Like, she also openly admitted to that, it's not like it's like 10 years in the relationship, it's I've got a discount on it, you fuck!
Yeah, but I'm sorry, but when I looked at it, I was like, that's a reasonable price for the... for the medium-sized one. And then they were asking for nearly £15 shipping.
Yeah.
That's why I wanted the discount. It wasn't the actual size of the canvas that was the problem. It was the postage and packaging.
And in the wake of that, when you were saying, is Christmas soon? Is there anything you want? And in lieu of that information, I looked on Kevin Smith's Secret Stash website.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm going to look and see how expensive the shipping is. The shipping is 3 times more expensive than
the
things
actual
that
product,
you buy.
Yeah. That's what I mean. It's ridiculous.
And it automatically chooses it for you, international shipping. And it was like $70 for a fucking Blu-ray. And then I looked and it was like, oh, you can go for standard postal. But then everyone's like, we wouldn't recommend it because this is America. And it's like, well, no. So I kind of sat back and went, nothing from Kevin Smith's website. I've got enough Kevin Smith shit. Happy birthday. Hey, guess what? Do you know that packaging? Look after it.
Yeah, lick it.
Lick it.
Frame it.
You will frame that fucking parcel. Oh, why? £70 worth. But yeah, I've got a really amazing Burroughs. And also, it's from Redbubble. So Redbubble is used by a lot of indie artists who, you know, don't have the means to, like, create canvases themselves. So you put your... It's a bit like POD, isn't it? It's you put your design online and then they...
Somebody buys it, basically.
They fulfil their end of the printing and all that.
Yeah.
But that those indie artists and illustrators get a profit from it. So that kind of like... We like supporting indie businesses, indie artists, but the majority of the stuff out there was fucking awful. So luckily enough, we did stumble across some bangers on Redbubble. But yeah, thank you, my gorgeous.
I did good.
You did.
Did good. So,
what did you get?
I got 4 books in total. The Courage to Care by Christy Watson. The House of Correction by Nikki French.
He is actually 2 people.
It's, what?
It's 2 people.
What do you mean it's 2 people?
It's a husband and a wife.
Oh.
It's a pseudonym. I never knew Nikki French wasn't a woman.
Oh.
It's a woman and husband.
Oh. Well, anyway, Nikki French. Seven Lies by Elizabeth Kay and Pine by Francine Toon. And I also got some wonderful Pandora earrings, which I will cherish for the rest of my life. And I got two little charms for my Pandora bracelet. And I don't like Disney charms, okay? That's like a serious disclaimer here.
But Pandora, if you'd like to sponsor us, like Article 1.
But Zach bought me a little Winnie the Pooh face and a little piglet that is cuddling a bear. And it's not Winnie the Pooh that he's cuddling. It's just another teddy bear. So they are like the best Disney charms I've ever seen. And they are so cute.
And you know what I realised with the Winnie the Pooh one? It's actually his face is recognisable. A lot of their Pandora charms. You look at the Harry Potter ones.
They
Dobby.
Don't look anything like
it. Dobby. Where the fuck is Dobby's nose? That's what makes Dobby. Dobby doesn't have a fucking nose.
Yeah, so I also got some flowers.
Yes.
Some lovely red roses, which are now blooming and sitting in front of us.
My lights in here generates the power of the fucking sun, I think.
I think it must do, because they are really blooming. And that was a nice little surprise this morning when Zach went out for a little wander down the town and came back with
a
lovely...
To get the tobacco.
Yeah, and came back with a lovely bunch of roses, so thank you.
Shall we share some of our lovings?
I think we should, but I just want to quickly run over the things that we're actually going to get down to business with. Once you've got past the soppy bit, which is probably going to be the first 15 minutes, we are going to review our final cinema viewings before Cineworld closed down. So Zach and I are going to review St. Maud and 23 Walks. Zach will review Akira. I will review After and
Netflix film
After We Collided.
Cinema film.
And then we will both review Cloud Atlas. Following on to that, we're going to go on to some books, and I will review This Is Going to Hurt by Adam Kay and The Guest List by Lucy Foley. And Zach will review The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat by
Oliver Sacks.
So that is the set list.
It should be called Autistic People Can't Be Creative.
That's the set list for today's podcast.
Yes.
But we are going to go a little bit into detail into the year that we've had together. And a quote that I'd like to pull from my favourite author of all time, who has written very little of what I've read. But the one thing I read that I would like to quote and quoted earlier on my Facebook
status, wrote very little of what you said.
No, wrote very little of what I've read. Like, you haven't... I haven't read a lot of what you've written.
Nothing.
Cheeky. I read Interiors 4, the first one.
Yes, you did.
So, anyway, I'm going to quote my favourite author in Anniversary Card 2020. Zach Ferguson, by the way. And it says this.
I really don't want to let you down on this, but I did not create that.
What?
That's actually a quote from somewhere.
Well, fuck you.
I'm sorry, I've broken that illusion.
Yeah, you have.
I did change it up.
Out now.
No, please do.
No.
It comes from the heart.
It doesn't come from the heart if it's a quote from someone else, you prat.
The reason we pull from quotes is because it has meaning behind it and it really...
Yeah, and that's why you quoted Charlotte Bronte.
Yeah.
So why didn't you quote whoever the fuck wrote that?
Because it didn't give me whose it was.
Right, well, I'm going to read out Zach's shitty replica of a lovely quote. No, I'm joking. He said, "I don't want a fairy tale ending with you." Rude. "I want to be there to help you face your fears and to help you overcome your failures. I want to give you the kind of love that's not distorted and fabricated, but real, raw and honest."
Mm. Yes.
Not written by Zach Ferguson.
Oh, come on. It's the emotion and intent.
But do you know what? This is written by Zach Ferguson, and it says, "Thank you for the..." Is that supposed to be laughter? Or is that meant to be an S?
Let's look. Where is it?
There.
Oh, thank you for the laughs, the tears.
The laughs. Right. "Thank you for the laughs, the tears, the love and support you have given me, that of which I find it difficult to put into words, whether spoken or written."
Mm.
Now that was from you, wasn't it?
I've got to admit something. Do you know my neighbour, Dale? I gave the card to him and said, "What would you..." I'm joking.
If Dale had written this, it probably would have been better handwriting.
Very true. Very true.
If
it was Dale's handwriting, it would be, I know that's an S. Not a fucking comma.
Look, I mean...
Well,
you do you want to quote some... Please don't quote my little drawings. Because that is sad sacks of shit right there. Like, I put so much sop into that that it might as well have just been like a crumbly
card. Disclaimer. This depiction is no way a prediction of the future. If I could do that, I would have found you earlier. Now, that is beautiful. Now, there's a photo of Laura carrying our second child, of whom we would like to call Caleb Stephen.
I would just like to say that the photo is me drawing a stick man.
With a little stick baby inside. I'm saying, I love you. And Laura is replying, I love you more. No returns, which copyright is owned by Sweat Drench Press and the likes of Laura Jane Marshall and Zach Ferguson. We've got a little one at Laura's feet. It's very disconcerting how tiny she really is. Maisie Alice. And I love it that you made me skinny. I know it's stick figures, but you could have been nasty and given me a belly as
like,
well.
The thing is I had a belly because I'm supposed to be pregnant in this depiction.
But guess what? This depiction is a thought bubble.
It is in no way... That's why I said it's a disclaimer. It is in no way a prediction of the future.
And it's going down to little Laura. Why are you putting your thumbs down like...
I put the hands the wrong way.
I just realised it looks like you're going... me daydreaming about our life and future together. Now, I'm going to read some from this.
Oh God, pick some nice bits so that it doesn't embarrass you or me.
Thank you for being the best partner anyone could ever ask for. I can't wait to spend many, 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 many more years with you by my side. Driving me mad and being the only person I could ever wish to spend the rest of my days with. Beautiful. Beautiful sentiments. And a lot of people will go, oh my God, why are you sharing this? Because me and Laura had this conversation over our anniversary meal. We're like this generally weekly, outside of anniversary. We always take time to let each other know what we mean to each other. And the reality is a lot of people siphon off their time and their emotions for Valentine's Day and anniversary. And me and Laura came to this conclusion.
I hate Valentine's Day. I think it is all money-making. Sorry.
It is. It generally is. Same with anniversaries can be said. But I think those are...
But anniversaries are all year round.
It's about how you apply it, isn't it? Like, I like Valentine's Day because it gives an opportunity for me to finally express my love and gift-giving. Same with anniversaries. But the thing is, a lot of people siphon off that time and that emotion. So, what did you say? Yeah, throughout the whole fucking 300 and whatever days, I fucking hate you.
364 days of the year, can't stand you. One day, I'll have sex with you tonight.
I'll have sex with you tonight. I love you. Like, it's... These types of words aren't just equitable and meaningful on anniversary. These types of words need to be shared. Not daily, maybe daily. It's dependent on the person.
Yeah, I think the thing is, it doesn't need to be forced, but the most important thing is that, for me, you know, you've given me gifts for our anniversary, I've given you gifts for our anniversary, that is something that we like to do. But I think the most important thing for me, for those other 364 days of the year, is that you see a book in Asda, or Tesco, or The Works, or something, and you go, oh, Laura would really like that, and you just go, do you know what, I'm going to pick it up, and that is... enough for me to go, it's not just the anniversary and Valentine's that you love me. It's those moments where you pick up a book and you go, it's not my thing, but Laura would really like it, so I'm going to get it for her, and vice versa.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of like, I thought you'd really like this, so I'm giving it to you, I'm gifting it to you. Mm. Not because I want something back.
No.
Not because there's anything like that, but it is purely that I've seen something, and it's that appreciation at any time.
Mm.
I can appreciate you at 1 o'clock in the morning when you're snoring. I can appreciate you at 3 o'clock in the afternoon when you're just doing your thing. It doesn't have to be a specific date, a specific time. No. You know, it is about just loving when you want to express that love, really.
Yeah. And it's, and that's the sharing of it. It's not like a lot of people are so easily offended. You're rubbing it in our faces! Our relationship ain't perfect. We love each other. Down to the core of each other. Mm. But our relationship ain't perfect.
We drive each other nuts.
We argue Quite a lot, but
actually, it's not as
no,
as
not as
be.
Often as I think.
It but feels like it's.
I'm going in the moment. It does. Look, this is an embellishment. I'm a writer. I'm always going to tell some form of fucking lie.
Men over exaggerate.
Yeah, we bump heads all the time, and it's about miscommunication. But it's about finding ways to communicate or to get over those hurdles and those things. We've had our hard times. We probably will have continuous threads and strands similar to that. But if you can see an end to it, and if it's worth that, like 12 hours or more of a heartache or anger or frustration, you can work towards bettering not just yourselves, but just...
It is the overall relationship that you're bettering. I mean, if you look at the arguments we had in the early days, we haven't argued about the same thing since.
No.
And still now, we don't argue about the same thing that we argued about 3 months ago.
No, it's not.
Because the thing is, yes, it was miscommunication at the time, but we've now communicated how we feel about that issue and we move on.
Yeah.
I think that's the most important thing to look at, is the fact that, yes, it's miscommunication in the moment, but once we've got over that hurdle never reappears.
No, and it's a thing about... A lot of people are so resentful, aren't they, when it comes from certain...
Yeah, they hold grudges. They're like, I'm never going to forgive you for what you said. Or blah, blah, blah.
It's not healthy.
No, the thing is it is actually healthy to argue.
That is true.
It is really healthy to argue.
But
and I don't
it isn't
mean...
to harbinge...
Yeah, you shouldn't be... It shouldn't be in a way that is constantly negative. It shouldn't be in a critical way. We all say things in anger that we don't mean. You know, we've both come across that ourselves.
Yeah.
And everybody will come across it at some point. We say something and we go, I really shouldn't have said that, but I was angry.
Yeah.
And it wasn't intended to hurt, but it kind of was because I was just angry and I was hurting and you just want to hit back.
Mm-hmm.
I think the difference is that we could argue until we're blue in the face, but that would never stop us from loving each other.
No.
And it would never cause us to do anything
but... It does pose questions. Of course it does. Like you said with our most recent argument, which was it was a heavy one. It was that thing, I was just looking at the whole situation and going, you know what, I can't deal with this, I want out.
Yeah.
And that is human, whereas you go through it, you fight through it, you work through it.
Turns out you have to drive 60 miles to figure out that you need to
come back. Well, you need to adapt a certain, I wouldn't say methodology, but just a certain...
But it's at that point we know that, okay, enough's enough, we need a couple of days where we just... You know, almost limit contact. We just go, right, okay, look, we're angry with each other. I still love you.
Mm-hmm.
I still care about you. But fuck off for 2 days.
Yeah.
And then in 2 days' time, we go, actually, okay, we're in a good place now to talk. You've calmed down, I've calmed down. I've driven 60 miles. You've screamed at something. And...
I actually didn't do much screaming, to be honest.
Me neither. I mean, I screamed along to One Direction. Does that count?
Yeah, a little bit. I didn't scream. I just... You, in my stead, I just gave myself, I gave myself, oh.
Ooh, no.
Nice. What, is that is that the one that's literally not been working?
Mm-hmm.
Look, see how long it's going to take me now.
Just let that go, sorry.
It's that, like anyone, we go to our parents and we offload, or our family members. But the most powerful thing for me is not to have that outside influence around me. Because for me personally, they do not help. They think they're saying the right things to you, whilst also,
mean the best of intentions.
Whilst also implementing their own biasness and their own idiocies.
So I think the thing is my background is my mum is a counsellor.
Yeah.
You know, she has background in psychotherapy. So when I go, Mum... She gives me the things that, quite honestly, I don't think I want to hear because they're the truth.
My family have a background in being bitchy, gossiping arseholes.
But it's chalk and cheese. And that's what works. Is the fact that you can learn from me, I can learn from you, we can learn from each other's family and our setups and our backgrounds.
It's a very autistic thing as well. I think I need... Everything's an onrush anyway, so when it comes from different sources... Sources that, you know, inherently in yourself, you're going to take something from your mum, or in my case, my grandparents, and it's going to like wear off on you a little bit harder because that's your authority figures.
And you take it from your mum too. Take it from your family because you've grown up with them. That's to be expected.
But this onrush, this flow, and it was just like, I need to go home and I need to cut contact from, like, almost everyone.
Yeah.
Not completely hide away, but contact so I can gather my thoughts and...
And that's what we did.
Departmentalise, yeah.
For a few hours, we went, right, I mean, I didn't tell Zach where I was going. I didn't even know where I was going. I just went. And he messaged me like 2 hours later and went, you know, I'm ready to talk now, I'm cleared. And I was like, okay, well, I'm on my way home from 60 miles away.
Let's see the fates again, it's perfect timing.
Yeah, because
well.
Just after I stopped, you messaged. The end of the day, nothing is perfect. It never will be. But the most important thing for us is that even though we do have miscommunications, is that our communication is probably the best part of our relationship.
It's contradictory, isn't it?
But it is the best part of our relationship is the fact that, yes, we can miscommunicate and misunderstand each other, but the aftermath from that is always, let's talk about what's going on.
There is a definitive start and end point.
Mm.
You can see it, whereas in the arguments, it isn't. It's like someone's got a pen and they scribbled over your notes. It's like, you're not going this way about it, you're going this fucking way. Whereas when you calm and collect, when you have a calm head on your shoulders, a lot can actually be done. I mean,
look how quickly we had that conversation afterwards and went, right, this is what's happened.
And what do you think? Why can't this be applied straight after
somebody said a stupid thing?
Yeah, it's hard.
So, that's the thing. Somebody goes, fuck you, and you react.
Yeah.
And that is effectively what a snide comment comes across as. And you might not mean it, but you're angry, you're frustrated. You come out with a snide comment and then you react. It's that instant red mist. Yeah. You know, blood goes straight to the brain. You're like, ah!
It's also like a pinch. It's like, what the fuck did you just pinch me for?
Yeah, exactly.
And then you're like, impulse? I'm sorry? Does it hurt?
Exactly.
And well, then... yeah, it fucking does. Oh, exactly. I'm sorry. I needed to do it. You know? But it's the good thing about it, like you said, it is that communication. I think a lot of people could go quite far by taking an example. I'm not saying from us, like, we're some, like, iconographic, like, couple, but...
We are, really.
I think this is why people gravitate towards our podcast, because of our transparency and our openness.
We are very honest.
And we're very open, and we're not complacent with our... A lot of people live in this deluded veil, like, what is easier. In my past life, if someone's hurt me or pissed me off... My analogy is a little bit like Danny Torrance in Dr. Sleep. You fucking hurt me. You've done one on me. Bang, you're dead. You're in that box.
Yeah,
you're
bye.
Buried. Yeah, you're fucking done. But whereas mine and Laura's relationship is so much more than anything I've ever experienced.
We do have to fight each other to kind of get
exactly.
That point
it's
across
like,
it, don't
yeah,
we? Because
yeah.
I'm like, wait, Zach, no, wait, just calm down. And he's like, fuck off. I'm like, no, wait.
Fuck off, I'm building this coffin for you. Metaphorically.
That's what I mean. And then it's like 2 hours later, you're like, shit.
No, but I've never actually had the impulse to, like, when we've, like, had our time away from each other, I've never, and I've always wanted to reassure you, this ain't me distancing.
Yeah.
I'm not distancing from you. I'm distancing from that
everything.
Hurt. From everything else.
Yeah, yeah.
That, not just you. Everything else.
But it's just, it's basically to clear your head of everything so that you can think straight and you've got everything out of the way. We stop contact for a couple of hours or whatever, or it's very limited. And then actually we're in a point where we go, I've cleared my head.
Yeah.
Are you ready? Yes, I'm ready. Okay, we'll talk.
And even if it isn't like that clear line that you know you're going to go from point A to point B, but you know that you're going to come to, you're not going to come to any crossroads that's going to like tamper with the overall, you know, structure.
Yeah.
You know that. We're both here, hand in hand now, we're walking this path together. I'm not going, fuck you, I'm going through the woods, and you're going, fuck you, I'm going where it's marked. Which is half the case, it is, because Laura has this great ability to, within moments of us being snide or saying things, she reels herself in, reels herself back, and then it's like that slap in the face automatically, where she's like, I'm sorry, we need to calm this down now, whereas I'm very...
You often don't like that, though.
I hate it.
Because the thing is in
I
that
can
moment,
admire it afterwards.
Yeah, yeah, but in that moment, you feel like, because I'm trying to calm it down, in that moment, you feel like I'm patronising.
Yeah.
And being really uppity and I'm better than you. Taking
the
moral high ground,
which I've said to you on numerous occasions, which, you know...
In that moment, of course it feels like that.
But
it's because I've reeled myself in and I'm like trying to...
Yeah, it's not that case at all. Like, hindsight is a fucking powerful thing. Sadly, it is hardly afforded to any of it. It's hardly bestowed onto anyone, apart on occasion with Laura. She says it, then hindsight, 3 seconds later, oh, fuck.
Yeah, no, I do realise quite quickly, usually.
Yeah, it's... But like we're saying, like this is, and like people are like, oh God, this is a Debbie Downer. It's not a Debbie Downer because this is just the infrastructure.
We're still together, guys.
Exactly. This is the infrastructure of life and love.
Yeah.
It is. It is what makes
if I could look,
a fulfilled life.
If I could look, I do look. When I look back on, and I don't like to do this very often, but when I truly look back at previous relationships, not in a bitter way, but in a hindsight way.
Yeah.
And I look at the relationship we're in now. I look at them and I think, my God, how did I not know? Even when it was only a 6-month relationship, or even when it was a 3-year relationship. Yeah. How did I not know from the outset, this isn't right?
Yeah.
But it's all you ever know, isn't it? Yeah. Until you find that person where you realise that you can say something really shitty.
Yeah.
And they still go to you, yeah, well, never mind. That's when you know you're in the right place.
Yeah, it is funny that way, and I'm not going to talk on your behalf, but I know from my previous relationships, it's like, I've found someone who's in the same circumstance. No one else wants me.
And that's kind of attractive.
Mm.
It's attractive. When somebody wants you or they like you, it's attractive. Because you go, they like me.
Yeah.
And I don't really like myself.
No, yeah.
And that's the thing for me personally. Yeah. Again, I'm not, you know, like you said, I'm not going to speak for you. But for me, it's when I look at someone and they like me,
yeah.
I'm like, oh,
yeah, yeah,
they
yeah.
like me. Yeah, yeah. I'm going to have them because they like me. And I don't for a second think, do I like them?
No, that's the thing.
I just pretend.
I'm just going to accept it. I'm going
to
accept it because this is all I'm offered. Yeah. I'm going to take it.
I'm going to take it before somebody else takes it, and then I feel really gutted because I didn't take
it. And like, one of my longest relationships ever for me wasn't a relationship, and that's how sad it is. I feel sorry for the other person on that side because I do believe that other person on that side was in love. For me, it was just companionship, but on a very.
More of a friendship.
Really. A friendship, it was, and it was that forced perspective. And then it was like, what you want out of this relationship, I want it, but I don't want it with you. It's awful. Like, it was that mentality.
That's what I want overall, but with you, I couldn't think of anything
worse, exactly.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things, but, you know, like, this is what a fulfilled life is. People say, what is life? What is the meaning of life? Those moments and those retrospects of how we motivate ourselves to change our ways, or we always will learn and grow.
The most interesting thing for me is I came to a point in life, and this sounds very sad from, you know, when you look at how old I am, is I came to a point where I said, I don't want children.
Yeah.
I want to be single. I don't want a relationship. Yeah. I don't need that shit in my life.
Yeah.
And the thing is that...
Me too.
Yeah, we were both in that point, but it's not until... So I thought for me, taking that away would mean that I wouldn't want a relationship.
Yeah.
And then I found you.
Yeah.
But then things changed for me.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I do want a relationship and I do want a family and children and all those things that you dream of, a house and marriage and this, that and the other. And I thought that I'd put myself into a point where I went, I don't want that.
Yeah.
I don't want that in my life. Because when I first met you, that's still how I felt.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I don't want that. And then after things, you know, like, you know, the first couple of months.
Yeah.
It was that realisation of that is what I want. Yeah. I just hadn't found the person I wanted. The right person.
Well, the thing is, because you've gone down that route of having lived with a partner before, you've gotten very quickly in the past, you went, got engaged, moved in, and were thrown in the fucking deep end. Yeah. And then something like that, you know, it makes you realise, no, I don't want that. And it makes you convince yourself, I don't want that at all. No, you don't want that with that person. I've said... Ever since I've lost contact with Luca, I'm not even going to put myself in a position to be hurt like that again. I am not going to give anyone that power over me to dictate how hurtful that is. I'm not going to get anyone pregnant. I'm going to ensure I don't. I'm not going to have a relationship that will be the inevitable lead on. And that mind frame with a past partner was, that's all she wanted, kids. Very adamant, and I was like, no, but it wasn't no. And in hindsight, it's not no, I don't want them, it's I want to do it right. And in the methodology that she or the, I was gonna say he, she, the way
might be she, he, you don't know.
The way she orchestrated it was, we can only have this if you do it my way, if it goes around.
Yeah,
I want to change you to meet that, to meet that goal. You need to change everything about you whilst also digging you out, going. I do accept you. I do accept you, but you have to do this. I'll do it. Well, if you accept me, you wouldn't.
Just let me be.
You'd let me be. Yeah. So it is that realization. It was with me and you. I was thinking, yes, this is a future. Yes, I want to have children. I see a clear path. Though there's going to be hurdles, of course. There's a clear path with us. We have this feeling. We do want to have children. We do want to move in together. Rightly. Properly.
Yeah. We want to do things the old-fashioned way.
Yeah.
You know, find somewhere to live together, get married, have children.
Yeah.
You know, that stability, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly.
It's not about just, oops, I'm pregnant. I mean, there have been times where we've gone, there's a possibility that I could be, and we're going to have to deal with that.
Yeah.
But in general, we have our plan, and we're not, at the moment, we're not in a position where we're like, let's try and have children.
No,
it happened as a... Oh, crap.
We've had moments like that in our relationship. And there was a moment where something did make everything tilt up and it did give us a perspective.
Yeah,
and it's, you know, things happen for a reason. And as sad as it may be or as...
I'm kind of glad in a way. Like, I went through that moment where I was really upset, didn't I?
Yeah.
And I felt really let down and I felt like I'd let you down and so on and so forth. But... now it's like it really kicked into me. That is what I want, but now it's not a good time.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that for me was probably the most powerful message. As sad as that may be, as awful as that may be.
Yeah.
That was the most powerful message.
And it is like the fates and the universe and also your body in so many ways.
Yeah, my body was like, not now, wait.
Yeah.
It was like, hold up, I'm not ready for this shit.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, you know, it does. It's like I wouldn't even say it's a tonal shift. It's just, it widens the plane in front of you. It allows you to...
I feel like, and I like these little hypothetical imaginations, I feel like, you know, in Frozen 2,
yeah.
there was the fog.
Yeah.
I feel like that event in our lives lifted that fog.
Yeah.
So then I could see... what's in front of me, what's in front of us, and what's coming towards us, and what we can do, and what we can face together, and how we're going to face it. For me, was that lift of that thought.
Yeah, that's great. That's a beautiful analogy.
I love little analogies.
A little analogy, a little symbolic, almost metaphorical, perfect way to frame it. But yeah, like, you know, it's... the sum of all the parts isn't just the good stuff. I mean, if everything was peachy clean, you know, it's... there's something... but it is. And there's something inherently wrong there. I do believe that.
Yeah.
If it's all so perfect.
Yeah, nothing's perfect.
Life throws a lot of shit at you, and for good fucking reason, I believe.
Yeah, absolutely. So...
a year in our life, so that's basically, we've covered most of the bases, but we've gone, what have we done together in a year to try and round it up? Give a overall view of what we've...
what's most gutting for me is the fact that Cineworld this year didn't tell me how many films I'd seen. Because if it had, I would have been able to identify exactly how many films we've seen together.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of gutted that Cineworld didn't do that for this year. But, I mean, what have we had? We've had mega ups. We've had some major downs.
Mm-hmm.
We have watched a shitload of films.
Mm-hmm.
We've read a lot of books between us.
Yeah.
We have done a lot of podcasts, probably not as many as you'd like to have done, but we've done a lot of podcasts.
I mean, we've done more than I could ever have hoped, to be honest.
Yeah. We've laughed. We've cried.
We've farted.
I mean, Zach farted on our first date. I probably waited until we were at least 4 or 5 months in.
Yeah.
And
she hasn't stopped since.
I think more than anything, without rubbing salt in anybody's wounds, we're happy.
Yeah.
That's all I can
and
say.
And I think that's going to get...
we've had a lot of steak.
We have, actually.
We had steak on our 6 months.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
We've had steak tonight.
Yeah.
That's a lot of steak, guys.
Steak in February.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So much steak.
It's been a very good year. We've got a lot achieved. Sweat Drench Press is not a thing without Laura. And that was a real bugbear of mine when we went into it. Laura was doing all this fucking hard work and people were acknowledging me and my part, and I've made it abundantly fucking clear, the backbone, the foundation is Laura. And at this point, Sweat Drench Press is all Laura at this moment in time. She is building books, she is creating, she is crafting, she is doing
editing,
book covers.
Formatting.
Yeah, she is, and she's falling in love with it whilst I've fallen out of love with it. I'm not going to lie, I have fallen out of love with it.
But, I think you'll fall back.
Oh, I know.
You'll come in and out, whereas I'm quite a steady.
Yeah.
I never fell too hard. So I've kind of always been this steady love.
Yeah.
Which is how I love anyway, really.
Well, it's very fitting with my character, though, isn't it?
I'm kind of very up and down.
I am all the fucking time. One minute I'm like, I love this. Next minute I'm like, I can't be fucking arsed. Not to dissuade anyone who's come to Sweat Drench Press. It's not like I'm like, oh.
And we've had a lot of submissions.
We've had a lot of submissions come in, which we won't be announcing anytime soon, the accepted ones. I think a lot of people are under this aegis or belief that as soon as the 31st of October comes, oh, we're going to get our answer, we're going to get a reply. Presses don't really work that way. Some do, but we realised with doing the Experimenti chapbook series, I'm not saying that the books that we put out because they were given to us and we felt obliged, but it kind of gave us the perspective of we need to give time in between releases.
Yeah.
Not because this book's gonna sell better than the other, but that's the case
for
any book.
It was time for us.
Yeah, and it was.
It was every week, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it was a bit. It was frustrating, but like with anything that you love, and I think it burnt me out to the extent of. It's still got residues, but I'm just lucky that I have you, and it's not a reality without Laura, but. Yeah, hopefully we'll have some submissions, acceptances, if the authors agree that they are certain and they ascertain that they want to be published with us. So we've got a podcast together, we've watched loads of films, read loads of books, had a lot of laughs, a lot of tears, we've got a press together, been on a few UK-based holidays.
I bought you a whisk.
You brought me a whisk. She brought me a whisk.
And tongs.
And tongs.
And scissors.
And scissors. Which every household actually fucking needs.
And I made him buy a wok.
Yeah. I mean, she is shaping me to be the man I've always should have been. And that is...
A house husband.
I just haven't got the cooking to a tea at all yet. I think I've got 2 meals that I'm capable of doing.
We'll get there.
Fajitas, lasagna, and my special... Chili con carne. Anyway, it's been a beautiful year, and hopefully we will have many, 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 many more. I had this weird epiphany, a little bit like you, a little bit of a dream, where we would still be doing this podcast, but...
In our 90s.
In our 90s. No, it was a thing of...
Hello, everybody.
No, it was... It was my fucking teeth. No, it was... We would still continue doing this, even if we had kids. We'd just get them involved. I can just see that happening.
Maisie, sit down. No, you're not playing with that robot. No.
Button.
No.
No, it'll be Zach, stop it. And Maisie or Caleb or whoever will be like, why's Daddy being a nose? Anyway, it's been a brilliant, beautiful year. Also, thank you to you, those of you who have stayed with us. I know that Facebook page doesn't have much. It didn't have much going for it, but me and Laura are trying to get a consistent flow of material out, whether it's the reviewer stuff, which Laura's been doing a fucking smashing job on editing those videos together.
Oh, I love it. That's the best bit.
It's fun. It's really fun. And I like doing my reactions. And some people criticise going, well, it's not like reaction videos. We do everything. How?
The articulate warbling way.
And lo-fi shite way.
Oh, yeah, okay.
As you reminded me last time. But it's been a beautiful year. Hopefully many more to continue. Touch wood, all is well. So
Move on to some reviews.
Let's move on into some of the reviews.
So let's go for our kind of cinema-based viewings.
Okay.
So we'll start with St. Maud.
Of which you were very, very excited for. We saw the trailer before... Fucking hell, it was Parasite.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is like, you were shocked yourself. You were like, this is like the first horror-esque thing that I've ever gone, I want to watch that.
I wish I hadn't. I can appreciate that it was very kind of art housey, mm-hmm. and I can appreciate some of the, like, the camera angles. Mm. The score was incredible. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to lie about that. And the camera angles were very, very clever.
Mm.
And for the most part, the storyline was pretty with it. But I don't know. I think it's one of those things. I hate horrors and I hate jump scares, but it's not horror if there isn't jump scares.
If there isn't some form of that nutrient.
And then I think horror. What gutted me the most was that there were like 3 in the last 10 minutes.
Mm.
And
quite consecutive, like, yeah. Okay, we're hitting those.
But it felt like it was rushed.
Yeah.
The whole thing was really lengthy.
The last 10, 15 minutes, yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
And we haven't actually spoken in depth about Saint Maud. I think it's good.
Yeah, but this is the thing, is that I felt it was quite lengthy and it was flowing quite nicely. And then it was like, bam, 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 right, we've hit all the targets,
yeah,
end.
Yeah.
You see?
Fuck, yeah.
And so that's why for me...
I still love it, though.
But, I mean, that's why for me it was a 2-star film. Yeah. I can appreciate the score. I thought it was incredible, which is like a star in itself.
Yeah.
I thought that the story and the flow throughout most of it was good, and the art housey element and the camera angles, that's the 2-star. But after that,
it was
didn't have everything for me.
It was... I'm someone whose appetite veers towards the artistic. I mean, fuck me, I did a 14-minute experimental short just about a fucking chair on a table. So, you know, a lot of people will say, oh, you'd watch paint dry. That's not true.
He gets very fidgety.
I get very fidgety. I mean, Saint Maud for me, all the hot points you made, the score, the visual poetry of it, and it was very broad and slow, and it was very...
But it flowed nicely, it was really... I'm using my hands to articulate, because I can't explain it, but it was very just, almost methodical.
It was, there was a tapestry of emotion and atmosphere, and then the last 10 minutes, it kind of lost sight of itself. Yeah. But I think...
So, hang on a minute, we need to go down to usual stereotypical horror.
And I think what happened was, it was a rush for something that may have felt mandatory for Rose Glass, who directed it. Yeah. Like, okay, we're going to go into the more horror tropes. But instead of...
I think it could have done it without that, though.
I think so, because too. The atmosphere's
is
enough.
It was... The thing is, this is the thing. You've got horror that's jumpy and you've got horror that is deeply disturbing.
And this is what that hit.
It was deeply disturbing until the end, and it kind of lost it. And then it was veering onto that horror for jump scare sake. Yeah. And I was like, eh.
There was, I see that. I also see that there was a certain visual and mise-en-scene type sensibility going on. But as her characteristics... She was very soulful, like a regenerated type religious figure herself.
And she was quiet, wasn't she?
And she was. But then that erratic behaviour, I think maybe they felt that they had to capture it in the edit. Not saying that it worked. I'm not saying that it worked and that general audiences won't pick up on that.
No.
They won't.
No.
They won't. And then that's...
I mean, you look at my mum, for example. Her, literally, her response was, what a pile of shite. Yeah. I've just wasted 2 hours of my life.
84 minutes, including adverts, for films that we can't see.
But, you know, for my mum who goes to escape, she came out and went, what a pile of shite, I'll never
I'm
get really
that
time back.
I'm really surprised, because your mum is quite an educated lady when it comes to psychiatry. And
but she doesn't want to
Does she not want that?
No.
Does she not like the symbology and the allegory and the framings?
No.
Is that not escape in a way?
No. For her, it's going to watch something that is so far from her life, regardless of what it's about, that you don't have to think about life anymore.
Okay.
For those 90 minutes,
that makes sense. Because you have films like that. I have films like that.
Chick flicks are my escape.
Yeah. My escape films must be British gangster films, I think.
Yeah.
Or the more... poppy, populist, like, I'm an unashamed fan of the Twilight series. That's my escapism.
Yeah,
I'm an unapologetic fan of all Resident Evil films except the last one. Why did you make it? They're my escapism, where all this twirling my moustache. I can still apply that critique, and I can still apply my appreciation of filmic values. And
it
my
kind of doesn't need it, because you kind of
no, because
go,
you
I
sit
love
back
it.
And go, you know what? I fucking enjoy that film.
Yeah, yeah.
The same with Michael Bay movies. Michael Bay is not making movies so critics can pull it apart and extricate things as much as Robbie Collins of The Telegraph likes to try and imbue some faux intellectualisms into his review where he's like, Michael Bay is talking about the condition of cinema. No, he isn't. He's just contributing to cinema and wanting to give you a really good, fast-paced, explosive, action-packed time. Robbie Collins, I used to love him because he used to write reviews for News of the World. He gave really great reviews to films that he imbued with his own misguided faux intellectual thinking. He thought that Rampage, the film with Dwayne Rock Johnson, was a perfect representation of post 9/11 fears and agitations. And I'm thinking it's just a movie about an ape. So, St. Maud, I've got to give 5 stars because for me, it hit those notes. It was what I anticipated. I think certain strands and certain sequences were shaped and formed in the trailer that misleads you, like the bit with the hand scalding on the oven that was not as effective as in the trailer. And I think that's because it typified the horror tropes. But when you go see it, it is that very melodic, very sensual. It's sensual in a lot
it
of
is,
ways.
Yeah, it is.
It's a sensual.
I think that's what I meant by flow.
Yeah, it's a sensual melody of emotion, of in that almost rapidity of fury and enraged passion to try and reach that certain quasi-transcendental moment. I loved it personally. I think Rose Glass is someone that you should keep your eye out from. 4. So, next up.
Next up is 23 Walks. So,
trailer made it look like it's an easy, low-budget British cute film with Alison Steadman, Mike Lee's ex-wife, woman who plays Mick's wife in Gavin's Mum and Gavin and Stacey.
All right, yeah.
David Johns, or was it John? David Johns. Who's known for I, Daniel Blake, and I think he also starred in Fisherman's Friends. He's a very talented, I'd say, middle age, veering into mid-50s. He's a very good actor who was discovered quite late in his life, but I think he's perfectly cast. And I watched the trailer and I was like, you know, it's going to be an easy watch. I knew that the trailer was really going to undermine the potency and the beauty inherent in this absolutely heart-wrenching drama. And it's not romance for the sake of just romance. It is a very real depiction of later in life relationships
love, yeah.
And love. And
I mean, I never saw the trailer.
The trailer, I knew if I showed you, you'd go, that looks shit. Because they couldn't give justice because they would have given away too much.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because it is a very... Though the film feels long, the duration, though it's quite a short film, it's a very... Every sequence is a cause and effect thing. Mm. Every sequence leads on to something else, a great revelation.
Yeah.
Whether it's unfolding about the character or circumstances or certain emotions. If you show too much of that in the trailer, it's telling you all of it.
I think for me, I mean, I went in thinking 23 Walks, this is going to be 23 Walks of Life.
Mm.
So we're going to go into maybe, you know, a number of people and their life and their different walks in life,
yeah.
Right? Turns out it's a film about dogs. Now, the only thing I can pick from this film whereby I will be a little critical is that the number of walks they did in fact have was more than 23.
Yeah.
Which frustrated me a little because it did really well.
Was it about concretising that relationship? And after that, it's just like, you know, walks are walks.
No, because some of them were midway through.
Yeah.
And that kind of frustrated me. I don't know. There's an OCD thing inside me, my brain, that kind of says that if you're going to start something, continue it all the way through. Continuity.
George, you really don't want to read my books.
But continuity for me is really important. For the most part.
And you're not just talking about continuity of like things out of frame or something looking off.
No.
You mean within the confines of the cinematic language.
If you're going to say walk number one...
Yeah, the cinematic language.
Yeah. If you're going to say walk number one, make sure that you actually calculate the number of walks. And if that means that there are 25 walks, call it 25 walks. Do you see what I mean? It's just little things like that that I'm like, it just bugs me. And it bugs me enough that it takes like a star off the rating.
Because you came out like five stars, and then...
Yeah, it's four. Because it's just little things that I'm like, yeah. And also, I find it really hard. And I know you've got to have a bit of... You've got to feel for characters, and you've got to feel certain ways towards characters. But it would have been nice if that woman was just lovely and she wasn't such a bitch.
She was a very... But what I liked was the realistic thing of they didn't romanticise it. She was depressed. She was going through a lot, and she was taken out on the wrong person. The person who was right for her there and then. And maybe it's also an allegory for... Yeah, they found each other, but maybe... We don't know. They might turn out to be like, actually, the guy goes, I actually really don't like it. I think Alison Steadman plays it on a very brave level, a very truthful level. Like, she is fucking difficult, and you look and think, she is really not worth your time, mate.
Yeah.
And maybe that is how we're meant to feel, audience-wise. Like, if he had any friends confined within the actual narrative, I bet a mate of his would turn around and go, she ain't worth it. I think us as the audience is meant to feel like that. She ain't worth it.
That's a good point.
But it shows the strength of his love and his dedication to potentially seeing a future with her. Mm-hmm. And there's a great big revelation in the film at some point where, you know, for us personally, me and Laura, our mind frames and how we are as forgiving individuals, understanding individuals, yeah, it took a moment for us to kind of compute, but we saw it totally from his side, always. And you're always with, and he's called David in the film, you're always on David's side, and you never feel he's done wrong by her. He's just tried to protect, a lot of the time, himself, and also...
It's funny, because strangely... As a woman, you would expect me to feel more for the woman than the man.
Yeah.
Because you tend to kind of go towards the same sex as you.
Yeah.
But no, I still felt really bad for poor little Dave. As opposed to, what was her name? I don't remember what her name was.
God, it's dropped out of my head now.
It was like Yvonne. No, it wasn't Yvonne.
The mistress.
The mistress, yeah. Henry's mistress. Oh, I can remember the names of the dogs, obviously.
Henry and...
Fern.
That was it.
Her name was Fern.
That's a beautiful name.
Mm. It is a lovely name.
No, I'm just saying what he says.
Just taking this. So, I mean, yeah, it was 4 stars for me.
4 stars for me. I think it's a lovely film. It's a very honest film. There's frustration also with his daughter that really infuriated me.
Mm.
It was. But what I think makes us most uncomfortable, you go into these films thinking it's going to be a romance and it's going to be elevated and it's going to hit those tropes, like those schmaltzy things. Yeah. This shows life as it is.
Yeah.
And I think that's the power of it.
Yeah.
That you look at characters and go, you know what, from an outsider's perspective, fuck you. But he's so inside of it, and he's so, you know, elevated by having these dog walks, a new lease of life for him, of which he has been living 2 years, living a lie almost to himself. Brilliant film. I'd recommend you watch it if you are into Mike Lee films, not Peter Loom, or Ken Loach films, quite similar in like that realistic dramatization. I think it's a movie that should be watched. I think it's a movie that, luckily enough, during COVID, it's been given an opportunity to screen at a big cinema like Cineworld. And that was
a very small screen.
And that was our last film, wasn't
that
it?
That was our cinema. Last film,
And I myself would give it 4 stars like you.
So
get it on DVD or Blu-ray when it comes out.
So I'm going to review After and After We Collided. And then I think that'll be the end of part one.
Yes, because...
we'll never be able to upload this podcast. And then in part two, we can move on to Akira and then Cloud Atlas. So After is a film that I didn't know about until I saw the trailer for After We Collided and realised that it's the second in a series. And I went, huh? Found it, started Googling desperately because I didn't even know the name of the previous. And it's not anywhere, so I was like Googling. So you have to go down to the 5th page of Google, which is always where all the porn is. And finally found...
After she squirted.
Yeah, kind of. So then I finally found that it's called After, which would be kind of ironic, really. And found that it is, in fact, on Netflix in the UK, and it is a Netflix film amongst about 10 other production companies. No word of a lie, the first 10 minutes of the film is all the production companies.
This is a funny thing. Netflix is like that was released on the big screen in America. But for the UK, it was like...
straight to
Netflix. Your Netflix film! Yeah. So I'm really surprised as to the decision to put After We Collided in cinemas. It's weird.
Maybe because it went so well on Netflix. I don't know. No. I hadn't heard of it, though.
No.
Anyway, found it on Netflix. Oh, I mean, if you were going to sit and pick it apart and rate it...
Tom Riddle.
Also known as Hero... Finds...
No, it's a ridiculous name. You get it up. Tico.
It but his name's Hero.
Hero Tico Masala Finds. What was it? It was...
It's Hero Finds Tiffin.
Ralph Finds is your uncle.
It's actually Hero Beauregard Faulkner Finds Tiffin.
Well, you can tell that he's related to Ralph Finds, not just by the surname, but by that whole name. But you will not know that this kid comes from the same genes as Ralph Fiennes. I'm sorry.
You wouldn't.
From what I've watched, this kid cannot fucking act.
He can't. He gets better in After We Collided. Yeah, look, if you were going to sit and critique it like we do on Articulate Warbling, it is a one-star film. It's shocking. But my sweet spot slash not really guilty pleasure is chick flicky.
Romance. Sensual, coming of age, coming into yourself, coming in the bag!
Teen.
I farted whilst I did that, whilst I thrust.
Well, I'm so glad you're not going to be doing that later.
I followed through.
Get your farts done now, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to critique it, it's a one-star film. But for me, it hits all the spots. It's my, I'm not guilty at all, but guilty pleasure. I loved it. I know it was badly acted. The story, though, was just beautiful. It gives me goosebumps thinking about it. It's just, like, wonderful. After We Collided was far better than After. After, I would have given 4 stars, genuinely, just from how I felt about it. Like I said, if you're going to critique it, it would be 1 star.
No.
For me...
You don't have to say that. You don't have to say that. For certain people, yeah, it might, but that's like with any film.
Yeah, but the thing is, I can see that. But
you
can
understand why it would be shit on.
Yeah. For me, it was a 4-star film because it just hits all the spots that I needed to hit.
The one thing I'm interested in knowing is there's great controversy surrounding more the book and the source material than... It's all right, just rub it into the carpet. it's saying it's okay to be in an abusive relationship. Does that cross over in the films at all?
Not at all.
Okay.
So there is actually abuse on his mother's side.
Mm-hmm.
So his mother is abused when he's very young, which I suppose would probably kind of reflect in the book as to why he would be abusive. But in the film, he's not in any way abusive. Yeah. And me and my mum went to watch this and it was just a really nice girls' night out.
Yeah.
It was just lovely. The acting is marginally better from Hero Beauregard Faulkner Finds Tiffin. It is marginally better. He starts to slip into a more natural English accent rather than this put-on posh totty thing, which grinds.
It's like a faux posh totty come, I want to be in another hood, you get me?
It was just awful in the first film, and I can appreciate that, but... In the second film, he does start to... It is still evident, but it does start to kind of ease off a little bit.
Yeah.
And it is much better acted. You can tell that they've aged, albeit by...
Is it sexier than the first?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the first is a 12.
This one's a 15.
It is.
Do you see any tits?
No.
Penis?
Close.
Arse?
Yes.
Nakedness?
Yes.
But no tits.
No tits. But the implications of what they're going
to
do.
That's why it's been elevated to R rated, isn't it? It's that. They are literally colliding.
Yeah.
Bless you.
Thank you. On a number of occasions. I mean, I'd put that one up for a 5-star, to be honest.
Fucking
again,
hell.
You could critique it, but I loved it. judgment
here.
I just loved it. It is. It is my. I'm not really guilty at all about it, but I have to call it my guilty pleasure. It's just. I don't know. It just hits all the points I need it to hit, man. That's all I got. It's just wonderful. It's
I beautiful. Feel it in my fingers. I feel it in my clitoris. Anyway, this will be the end of part one.
Correct.
So then we will go on to Akira, my review.
Cloud Atlas.
Cloud Atlas.
And then on to our book reviews.
Okay, so we'll be back.
This has been Articulate Warbling. A Year in Our Life, part one. With Zach and Laura. Wait for that. It'll be coming up sooner than later. And we'll see you soon. Thank you so much for listening. Have a good day.